You're listening to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Big John McCarthy has witnessed the best that the UFC had to offer.
That is it! Game, set, match! We have a new champion!
Your backstage pass to the world of mixed martial arts and combat sports on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network.
Let's get it on!
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and me, Sean Wheelock. Every week on this podcast, John and I give you an inside look at MMA and combat sports, always separating fact from fiction. On this week's program, we'll discuss the announcement by Benson Henderson that he'll test the open MMA market following his win at last Saturday's UFC Fight Night in South Korea and subsequent conclusion of his contract with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Big John and I will also look at the decision by the Nevada State Athletic Commission to release the officials' assignments and pay for UFC 194, which includes John as the referee for the Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor main event and gives a rare public insight into what MMA refs and judges actually earn. Plus, we'll recap Tyson Fury's upset win over Vladimir Klitschko this past Saturday in Germany to claim multiple versions of boxing's World Heavyweight Championship and examine the overall state of the heavyweight division. And as we do on every episode of Let's Get It On, John will answer your questions. Submit them via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, and on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Remember that you can download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Let's Get It On is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/letsgetiton. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, and MP3 player. Well, of course, this past Saturday, Benson Henderson defeated Jorge Masvidal by split decision in the main event of UFC Fight Night 79 in Seoul, South Korea. Following the bout, Henderson said to the media, quote, "Next for me, I'm not sure, but I am going to test the market." So, John, the market is, of course, the free agent market. The Masvidal fight was the final fight of Henderson's UFC contract. So he is now going to shop his services as a professional MMA fighter.
You know what? That's his right, and that's what a lot of people think fighters should do to, you know, see what the market will bring and see if they can get, you know, more money out of even the promoter that they're with. And it's a way of trying to, you know, bump up, you know, your pay. And you cannot blame a person for, you know, this is his job, this is what he does for a living, and he wants to earn the most money that he can earn. So if you can go out on the free market and see that, you know what I'm making right now, no one else is even willing to match with that, he's going to say, okay, I kind of know where I'm at. Or if he has people that are offering him more than he makes, then he's saying, you know what, I'll go back to the UFC and see if you want to match this, but at least it's going to bump my pay up. And I think that's what he's looking for.
I've always been an open market person. I think that choice is a great thing. Opportunity is a great thing. I know there's a school of thought with MMA fighters that say, we want to see the best fight the best. So we want to see all of the top guys in the UFC. But perhaps because I work in this industry like you do, I like the idea that people can go out and they can literally shop their services, whether it's a fighter or whether it's a television commentator. I'm kind of in the same situation, although through much different circumstances, but I just did one championship. I have Victory coming up. I have Titan coming up. It's a nice opportunity to be able to test different things and find where you want to land. And that's what Henderson is doing. He's extremely marketable. He's only 32 years old, former UFC lightweight champion. He can win at welterweight. This could be a really big signing for Bellator or ONE Championship or World Series of Fighting or back to the UFC.
Absolutely. You know, here's the point. And this is what people don't think about when going out on the free market is not an easy thing in any way, or even just negotiating a contract with, you know, your promoter that you're working with. If it was Benson with the UFC, let's say he's going back to the UFC. It's one of the worst things to have to deal with as the fighter, because you're putting a price tag on you, okay? And you're saying that, you know what? I think that I should make, you know, $250,000 a fight, $300,000 a fight, $400,000, whatever it is. And you have someone coming back and telling you, no, you're not worth it. And it's a horrible position to be in because you actually have a number that you're valuing yourself at, and then someone could possibly be coming back to you and saying, no, you're not worth that number. And so it's not an easy thing to do. It sucks. But at least in the free market where you have the ability to go to multiples, you know, it's not just one entity's or one person's opinion of what your value is. Now you're going to go out and you're going to see, you know what? Let's see what the free market is. Let's see what 1FC thinks that I'm worth. You know, Benson is, you know, half Korean. It might be a place that, you know, they look at saying, hey, this is a person that we can have fight for us. He's as good as anybody we have on our roster, if not better. And you know what? Bring him to the, you know, Korean public and let them get, you know, in love with him, basically the way the UFC just did in fighting him in Seoul, Korea. You know, it's a good idea for 1FC. For Bellator, hell, you know, right away, you know, whether you put him in the welterweights or the lightweights, you know, Benson Henderson against Ill Will Brooks. I would love to see
phenomenal. That.
Yeah, I mean, both these guys, they're very, very similar in the way they fight. And you look and you go, hey, that's somebody that Bellator should sign. And, you know, a lot of people sit there and say, you know, crap about Bellator. Oh, they sign old UFC fighters. Well, if they sign Benson Henderson, he's not an old UFC fighter. This is a guy that's, you know, coming off of wins. He was the lightweight champion. He is a phenomenal fighter. That's a great signing. And that's a signing if they do it. That's, you know, saying, you know, that they want to be competitive in putting on fights with some of the best fighters in the world. So it's a difficult situation for Ben. It's not easy. It's not what we're going, oh, this is like a money grab. It's not. It kind of sucks because you have people actually saying, you know what, yeah, you're worth that, or no, you're not worth that.
So Henderson, 4-3 in his last 7 fights, but back-to-back wins. One can make the argument that he is no longer in the prime of his career. I'm not sure that I buy that because he faces top-level competition. And to me, he's someone who could again be a world champion, whether that's in the UFC or Bellator or ONE Championship or World Series of Fighting. I think he is an elite-level fighter. If he were to go to, say, Bellator, where I was the commentator for 5.5 years, that's almost a tipping point moment to me because this is someone who I think is extremely relevant. I personally think, despite that 4-3 record in his last 7 fights, he is very much in the prime of his career. And sometimes it just takes one, and then other athletes will follow, be that MMA or the old AFL-NFL days, or if you look at moves around in soccer, when players started going from, say, Italy to England in the 1990s, sometimes it just takes that one.
It's true. Well, you know, you already had the one. And I think that's part of what is, you know, occurred here. You know, this goes back a little bit, you know, farther. You know, Gil Melendez was going to make the switch, if you recall.
He was.
He was offered a contract by Bellator, and the UFC ended up matching that contract. And now the UFC will always have the right when they have that person under contract to have them come back and match, you know, or exceed whatever the contract is that the athlete's being offered. And so that means that they get to keep the athlete. But you look at this whole situation, you know, it's good for the sport. Phil Davis just went from the UFC into Bellator. He's in Bellator now. That's a big switch. And these things are going to happen. And it's going to be impossible for the UFC to keep all of the fighters that they have, you know, under contract with, you know, exceeding expectations of money and things like that. You know, they're a business. They've got to look at this thing in a business fashion. And sometimes they're going to lose fighters that they would actually like to keep because they have somebody coming in and saying, you know what, we're going to give this guy this much money. And they look at it financially and say, you know what, it's not worth it for us to keep that person because he doesn't make that kind of money as far as drawing in people, and we don't think that we can market him that way, and so they're going to give him up. But if you look at some of the matchups that are possible, you know, people talk about, you know, oh, they want all the fighters in one place so they can see all the best fights. I would love to see, like I said, you know, Benson and Bellator against, you know, Will Brooks, or if you put him in World Series of Fighting, look at Justin Gaethje. My God, that would be a phenomenal fight. Holy Christ, you know.
John, you mentioned Phil Davis. So under Scott Coker's regime, since he took over from Bjorn Rebney June of last year, there have essentially been three big name UFC fighters who have come over to Bellator. But one could make the argument that they were on the downsides of their career. I'm not making that argument. I'm just saying one could. So Phil Davis, he had lost 2 of 3 in the UFC when he came to Bellator. But again, this is high-level competition, and he's not getting squashed. Josh Thompson comes to Bellator, 3 straight losses in the UFC, just 2 wins in 7 fights. Melvin Gillard, UFC, then World Series of Fighting, then to Bellator. But he entered that promotion, Bellator, 3 wins in his last 10 fights. That's where I think someone like Bellator wants to be very careful, trying to raise themselves up. And I know Bjorn Rebney was hypersensitive about this. Let's not get guys who are stars, but are really stars from a past era. Maybe you saw some of that with Tito Ortiz, no disrespect. Stefan Bonner, no disrespect. Even Rampage Jackson, no disrespect. But that's the fine line. It's great to have stars, but you want to have relevant stars. We've been talking a lot about this over the last few weeks with Ryzen FF and Tsuyoshi Kosaka and bringing back Fedor Emelianenko. It's a fine line because you have to remember we're in the year 2015. We're not in the year 2008.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're looking at, you know, when you're looking at Tito Ortiz and when they signed Tito, Tito's an older fighter, and right. He's absolutely definitely not at the pinnacle of his career. His career is, you know, as far as it's tailing off, and he's going to be ending it. Same with Stefan Bonner when they brought him back. But when you look at, you know, Josh Thompson, Josh is an older fighter, but if you look at those losses, there's only one that it was a serious, that was a loss. When he fought Tony Ferguson, his last fight, and, you know, sometimes things just don't work out for you, right? But he got beat by Tony Ferguson. That was a definite loss. But, you know, the other fights, he fought Bobby Green. You know, that was a split decision. Many people thought he won the fight. And then the other one was he fought Benson Henderson and broke his thumb in a fight that a lot of people thought he won that fight also. And so, you know, he wasn't getting squashed either, and he was fighting top-level competition. So the pickup of Josh Thompson for Bellator, you know, that's a quality pickup. Josh Thompson can fight with anybody.
Fully agree. And,
you know, the real question when you're looking at Bellator's got, you know, different types of fighters. They do. They look at the, I think they look at the sport differently than the UFC. The UFC looks at the sport, I mean, almost solely based upon, obviously they want entertainment, but they look at it as a sports enterprise, and they look at it as a sporting competition, and they're looking at putting the best versus the best all the time. They don't do a whole lot of, hey, this fight will be fun. Now, they do that sometimes, and, you know, they're obviously going to have something, you know, when they bring in Phil Brooks, you know, that's, well, let's see what happens with this. They've done it with, you know, James Toney when they fought Randy Couture. But for the most part, the UFC is almost a straight down the line. This is a sport. This is a sporting competition, and we're going to get these guys fighting so we have people get to the point of who is the best. Bellator does it a little bit different.
Well, and to your point, John, with the UFC, look, you're constantly seeing the rankings on television. Number 15 versus number 8. Number 12 versus number 9. It's almost like college basketball or college football. They're, I don't want to use the word obsessed, but they're very motivated. And I don't know if that's coming from the UFC. My guess is it's actually coming from Fox Sports, but they're very motivated to push forth those rankings. And again, that's saying we're a legitimate sports enterprise. We're not just making freak show fights or fun fights or novelty fights. These fights are all leading to something, and that's a world championship bout.
Yeah, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that's, you know, a lot of people look at that's the only way to do things. And Bellator looks at it with Coker and, you know, under, you know, being the leader of that company. He looks at fighting as, yes, it's serious, but it's also entertainment. And we want to put on interesting fights. And so interesting fights sometimes are not going to be, you know, number one against number two, even though that to me is an interesting fight. They're going to look and say, we want to have fights people just look at and say, who would win if so-and-so fought so-and-so? And that's the kind of fight sometimes that they do, and there's nothing wrong with that either. That's what the fighting world, that's what, you know, the sport of combat sports can do comparatively to, you know, that's different than what the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball can do. Those entities only have one chance to have a fun game. They do the fun game when it's the Pro Bowl, All-Star weekend. You know, that's the time that, you know, you see the fun things with, you know, the NHL puts on their All-Star. They do the shootouts. They do all the, you know, different things. That's the fun game. And guys don't, you know, they don't play that serious, trust me. You know, you go to the Pro Bowl for the football. You know, they're not hitting as hard as they can. It's just, look, it's a different game. That's the time that those entities that take sport very serious and have, you know, this winning attitude towards everything, they have one chance to do that fun thing. Well, in fighting, there is more chances to put on just fun events based upon, I wonder who would win this. And that's what, you know, some, you know, Bellator does. World Series of Fighting does it a little bit. And, you know, I think ONE FC has got, they do it to a point, but Bellator is the one right now that's showing that difference. And that's what you're going to see with Ryzen.
And with Ryzen in the mix, too, with Benson Henderson. The interesting thing, though, about Ryzen for me is that Nobuyuki Sakakibara, the former head of Pride, now the head of Ryzen FF, has stated that they plan on doing four events in 2016. Basically, two shows in 1 week in August and then two shows in the final week of December. It looks as though to me that their strategy is getting a lot of fighters on loan, be that somebody like James Thompson, who's under contract with Bellator, or Shinya Aoki, who's under contract with ONE Championship. So I don't know if they have the infrastructure right now to sign Benson Henderson. Maybe it's a situation where you can sign a contract with two promotions if Ryzen has a partnership. It really is an interesting time in MMA. I think the last time we saw this legitimate free agency situation was probably the early part of last decade when the UFC was trending down a little bit and Pride was trending up and up and up, and fighters were leaving the UFC to go to Pride.
Yeah, but I mean, you can look at, you know, let's take a look at it in reverse, and it'll tell you about the way Sakakibara does contracts. Is if you go and look back to when Pride was bought by the UFC, many of the contracts that the UFC ended up obtaining through Pride were open-ended contracts, meaning the fighters could fight for other promotions. So when you're looking at that, I'm sure that's what they're going to do now. There was very few fighters that they had full control of. They had a ton of open-ended contracts where, yes, the fighter was contracted to fight for Pride, but they were also open to go to other promoters. And I think that's what, you know, Ryzen is going to be trying to do. They're going to mimic or mirror what they did before. And, you know, if they did that with a, we'll say a Benson Henderson, said, you know what, hey, you know what, we're going to, you know, contract you to fight for this many fights, but you're also allowed to go in and to fight in other places. They could do that.
And that's extremely attractive to a fighter. Some of the early Bjorn Rebney contracts allowed that. Hector Lombard was able to fight in Australia. Alexander Shlemenko continued to fight in Russia. So as Bellator grew under Bjorn Rebney, the contracts became more and more restrictive. And certainly the UFC is not allowing anyone to go and fight in any other competitions. They might be able to do a different type of combat sport or martial art on very rare occasions, but by and large, not even by and large, across the board, if you sign a UFC contract, you're only fighting MMA in the UFC.
Yeah, but you know, and that's, look at, they're looking at it saying, hey, if you want to be part of us, you want to fight with us, we don't want you being able to go out and just, you know, go to another promotion and go and, you know, fight a fight that we don't think is good for you and then possibly lose a fight in that promotion. And then what we've done to help try to build you up is now worthless. So there's a lot of reasons behind it. And it's, you know, it's understandable, but most promoters don't want to share, you know, what they have. Most of them like to hold on to what they have, and they can do dual promotions and things like that. But the UFC doesn't do that. The UFC is, you know, they're a sole propriety. They're not going to do any dual promotions. If they were, they would have done it with M1 long ago, because Dana did it. He wanted Fedor. And that was one of the big stumbling blocks is, you know, Fedor had M1 and M1 wanted to co-promote and be part of it. And the UFC just had no part of that.
Which is how Fedor Emelianenko went to Affliction and how Fedor Emelianenko went to Strikeforce.
Yeah.
In a weird way, I was the beneficiary of that because I was able to commentate the first Affliction. You did the US TV broadcast, but Jimmy Smith and I did the international broadcast. As part of that agreement, there was international TV on Affliction 1 because of Fedor Emelianenko. Then when Fedor Emelianenko went to Strikeforce, Jimmy Smith and I did the international broadcast, the show that went everywhere but the US and Canada in English language, Fedor Emelianenko versus Brett Rogers in 2008 in Strikeforce, again because of that co-promote agreement, something that Dana White was just unwilling to do. And if you recall, there were the M1 logos slapped up all along the Strikeforce cage, and Dana White was just simply not going to allow that.
No, but obviously, you know, you need Fedor, so because that's going to get you money. So we're going to have to get you hooked up with Fedor again. Get you a job. Everywhere Fedor went, you had a job. That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, I was hoping for Ryzen FF, but we'll wait and see on that. I think with the US TV partner, that's probably not going to happen. But, John, so much of the online speculation with Benson Henderson has basically come down to he's going to Bellator or he's going to re-sign with UFC. To me, the wild card in this isn't Ryzen. It's not World Series of Fighting. It's ONE Championship. And I have a different view of ONE Championship because I just came back from Beijing. I did my first show with them. I'm not just saying this. I was blown away by the promotion. Not only was I treated extremely well, the professionalism, the attitude, the people who were working there, such as Victor Cui, the CEO, our buddy Matt Hume, one of the greatest submission specialists of all time, an amazing trainer out of Seattle. It's a first-class organization. What struck me, too, with ONE, which I don't think I fully grasped until I worked for them last month, they don't want to be the UFC. They want to be ONE Championship. And they're looking at the Asian market, namely the Southeast Asian market, to become the number one MMA promotion in that region of the world. They definitely are doing well. They're getting big crowds. Ben Askren signing there from Bellator was a major, major announcement for them. I know Askren loves it in the promotion. And I think that there's going to be, I don't know if there's going to be a formal offer. I have no idea of that. But I think there's going to be some talk to Benson Henderson, or at least to his people, that you might want to look at ONE Championship because they treat their people really well and they're doing things right.
Well, you know, again, he's open to do that. The real question for any fighter, especially one that's from North America here, when you're looking at, you know, going to a promotion like ONE, nothing wrong with it at all. Great promotion, do really good fights, have good people associated with it. You know, when you're talking about Matt Hume, Rich Franklin, you've got great people associated with that, you know, promotion. The real question you have to ask yourself is, what's important? What is important to you? Now, if money is the number one thing, that's everything to you, and they offer you the most money, then that's the place you're going to go. But if you look and say, well, you know what? Money is important, but I also want, you know, I want my family and friends to be able to see me fight. And you're starting to get a little more limited by ONE because of where their shows are at and where you can actually, you know, catch their fights. So there's a lot of things as far as, you know, personal, you know, endorsements and things like that, and the way that you can be built up as a fighter and your, you know, image and everything like that. Obviously, the UFC is the big dog when it comes to that.
When John, there's no question. And certainly from a North American perspective, a lot of fans are so UFC-centric. And I think, look no further than Hickson Gracie and Hoist Gracie. You have firsthand knowledge. You know how much better in every aspect Hickson was than his kid brother Hoist. And yet to the average U.S. or Canadian MMA fan, Hickson Gracie, I'm not sure who that is. Hoist Gracie, oh, the dominant champion. Because Hoist fought in the UFC and Hickson never did.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's part of what you have to look at if you're Benson Henderson or anyone in going to a promotion such as Ryzen or ONE FC, one that is based out of Asia. It's going to be a different context. You're going to drop off the face of the earth. Ben Askren right now, for the most part, you know, I know who he is and hardcores are going to know who he is, but he's fallen off the face of the earth because there's no casual fan that knows who Ben Askren is. And that's part of what comes with who you sign with. And it's just, it's a personal choice. It doesn't, you know, doesn't mean anything to me. If someone wants to go to ONE FC, great, great promotion. Go fight, go have fun. But you're looking at saying money is the big issue for me. I want to be paid up front and I'm going to take that money. I'm going to stash it away in different things and I'm going to invest it. And that's how I'm going to have my living for the rest of my life. Great. Do it that way.
And I think that that logic follows through, at least through a lot of North American fans' minds. And let's be honest, worldwide fans' minds, that if you're not in the UFC, you're somehow less than. And I certainly don't hold this view. I fully recognize, as they well should be, that the company our buddy Art Davey started, UFC, is the clear dominant number one in MMA. But it doesn't mean that everything else is minor league or less than. A lot of people feel that way, though. So you can be racking up victories in ONE or Bellator or KSW or Jungle Fight or World Series of Fighting or Ryzen. But if it's not in the UFC cage, it just doesn't mean as much in a lot of people's views.
Absolutely. And that's a hard part for, you know, fighters.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's, you know, something that, you know, even if you're looking at, you know, fighters from Bellator or World Series of Fighting right now, when you look at the MMA media and you look at, you know, how they rank fighters and stuff, it's based a lot on, well, you know what, there's just not a whole lot of depth for you to fight good fighters out of that promotion. So we can't put you as high and stuff like that. And that's a personal thing that fighters have to deal with and say, how important is it to me to have people recognizing what I do? And if it's important, then I'm going to tell you that 1FC is probably not the place for you to be. But if it's not important, then it's a great location for you to be. And it's a place, if you can get more money there, go.
John, as a final point, and just to follow up on what you're saying, you really hit on it. It comes down to what a person wants. I got to know Ben Askren fairly well when he fought in Bellator. I really like Ben Askren a lot. His wife, Amy, comes from Kansas City like me, so we were naturally going to hit it off. Ben went to Missouri. My mom went to Missouri. We had a lot of things in common. We definitely hit it off. And I have a little bit of understanding into Ben Askren. I'm certainly not in his inner circle, but he's motivated by other things than just, oh, I'm a UFC champion. He was in the Olympics. He was a two-time national champion in Missouri in wrestling. He wants to make money. I know he talked about wanting to travel when he was in one championship. A different person, maybe to them, the motivation is to be recognized in the UFC or its endorsements. Every individual fighter, regardless of who they are, is driven by different motivations. And I think when you circle back to Benson Henderson, maybe those motivations come back to where he ultimately signs, where he ultimately lands with his next contract.
Absolutely. You know, and it's everything you're saying, it's true. And, you know, Ben Askren, here's the problem. No matter what, if you ask Ben Askren, would you like to fight in the UFC? Yes, he would. And why? Because that legitimizes them as a fighter. Now, Ben Henderson has been with the UFC, and he's been the champion. He's been a legitimate fighter. People give him credit for, you know, all the stuff that he's done. So he's had that, and so with him, it's not that important right now. He says, you know, he even said, I think in his thing, he'll end up retiring with UFC, which is okay. Maybe you will. Maybe you won't. Who knows? But with Ben Askren compared to Ben Henderson, one has been there, one has been legitimized. One has not been there, and although he has an undefeated record and is an incredible fighter, a guy that, you know, his ability to control people on the ground is just impressive as anything, he has not been legitimized by a lot of people and even the press, because they keep on saying, well, he hasn't fought the top-level competition, meaning he hasn't fought in the UFC, and that's what's going to legitimize him as a fighter in a lot of people's mind. Now, in his mind, he could look at it and say, I don't give a shit. And that's fine. But a lot of fighters do.
I think Ben Askren definitely has that mindset. Well, on Monday, the Nevada State Athletic Commission announced the officials who will be assigned to UFC 194, set for December 12th in Las Vegas. I'm really happy, John, that you will be the referee for the main event, Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. It's the UFC featherweight title unification bout. It might just turn out to be the biggest fight pay-per-view-wise in UFC history. Now, in a surprise move, Nevada also announced the pay that the refs and judges will receive to work this card, which includes the $1,900 to you, John. Thus, finally, I think, dispelling the long-held myth worldwide that you earn tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars per fight.
Ah, oh, man, I tell people all the time, I get, how much can you make being, it's like, hey. If you do this for the money, then you're doing it for the wrong reason.
If you're asking that question, it's not for you.
Exactly. And, you know, the whole point is this. This is what people don't understand is when you get to the point where you're doing these fights, there's things that come with these fights. And yet, every official wants to do the big fights. That's part of being, you know, who we are. And, you know, you want to be the guy that's making the decisions in there. But with it comes a huge responsibility, because how many eyeballs are on that fight? And if you screw it up, you're going to be ostracized and tagged with it forever. So you have to be someone that can handle the pressure that comes with it. And there is a pressure that comes with it. And it takes time to get used to dealing with that pressure. And that pressure with a lot of people, you know, they want to do these fights. They want to get in there. And then when they finally get the chance, that pressure is on there. And it's a self-imposed pressure, but it crushes them. And so when you get this fight, you know, you got to handle it the same way as you handle any fight. And you sit there and you look at it and say, hey, you know, you do things the right way. You be fair to the fighters. You try to give the fighters every chance to fight in a fair fight that they can. You try to give the fans the fight that they paid to see. But in the end, as an official, my most important thing is the safety of the fighters. And if one of those fighters cannot intelligently defend themselves in an effective fashion in that fight, the fight's going to come to an end, and then everyone can sit there and hate me.
John, I'm not just saying this because you're one of my closest friends. You definitely deserve that assignment. I also think you deserve a lot more than $1,900, but I know this industry, and the vast majority of people officiating MMA are earning less than $1,000, and often is the case, less than $500. There's just not that lucrative pay, but it's not about the money. And I bring up the $1,900 not to say, oh, you deserve more, or to get public sympathy. I know,
oh, I deserve more. Come on, let's go.
A lot of people listening are saying, I would pay the UFC $1,900 to referee that fight or just be on that card. But I think it's always fascinating to see what people earn in any industry. As humans, I think we're kind of hardwired to be interested in other people's finances, regardless of what it is. And I just like the fact that Nevada is actually pulling back the curtain and saying, this is what we pay our people, because it's pretty unprecedented. We don't do that in Kansas, my home state.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people don't like it. A lot of people think it's wrong that you sit there and put out someone's pay. I don't care. You know, I'm pretty open and honest about what I make. You know, if someone asks me, I'll tell them. You know, and it's because, hey, you know, so you know what I made for the fight. And trust me, I get people coming up going, are you crazy? You should get paid a lot more for that. I wouldn't do it for that. Then don't do it. No one's asking you.
Right,
to,
exactly.
You know? I don't know what to tell you. It's a matter of when it comes to officiating, you know, I get paid, you know, anywhere from zero, because I do a lot of fights for free. But, you know, small shows, you know, we're talking, you're making, you know, if it's amateur stuff that I'll do at times, you're talking about $100. You're talking about $250, $350, $400 for all these shows, you know, that not every show we do is a big show. And, you know, I had someone, you know, said the other day, they said, so-and-so saw you at this fight. They were like, why is he doing fights there? It's because I love fights and I love doing my job. And the pay is not what I'm really doing it for. Obviously, I like getting paid. I'm not going to sit here and lie to someone. But, you know, to sit there and say, you know, I would do it for free anyways, I probably would. Okay. Now, I don't want to sit there and tell, you know, a bunch of promoters that. But I love the sport of MMA. And so as far as how much we make, you know, if they put it out there, they put it out there. You know, look at Nevada pays more for a championship fight than any state pays any official. So that $1,900, that is the most that you're going to see. Thank you very much, Nevada. It's very nice of you to give us that much. I appreciate it. Obviously, if you get into other sports, you're going to get, you know, there's a whole lot more involved with how much sometimes guys will make.
You said you would do it for free as a commentator. I would do it for free. I hope my agent isn't listening to this podcast. We obviously have families and we have mortgages and we have bills, but it's a passion project. When I've refereed, especially the last few years that I've refereed boxing and some Muay Thai, I can't do it any longer now that I'm a commission member in Kansas. That was the only stipulation. I can keep broadcasting, do the podcast, do whatever I want, okay. Broadcasting, commentating wise. I just can't referee anymore. Yeah. But the last few years that I did referee before I took that commission appointment in July, I almost forgot that I was getting paid and I would be given a check of a few hundred dollars. And it was like, wow, it's like I found some money under my car seat or in my couch cushion. It really felt good because I was there for fun. But I've thought in preparing for this week's podcast how much I earned as a referee. And so I started refereeing in my early 20s. And so we're talking most of the refereeing I did was late 90s and early 2000s. I believe the most that I was ever paid, and I never did anywhere high-level world title fights. I did a USBA fight and I did an NABF fight, but never world title fights. Most I ever got paid was $385, and a lot of the time I got paid $50, and that was the drive out of state from Kansas City. Yeah. $50, no gas money, no hotel, which means I lost money to be there.
Hello, that's the whole thing. I had
a great time, and I don't regret it at all.
People look at it and they go, so you got to drive there, and they're paying for your gas? No.
No.
What about your food? No. You know, if you end up having traveling – where, you know, you fly and stuff, yes, the promoter pays for your flight. Yes, they'll pay for your hotel room. You know, that occurs all the time in the sports. But for the most part, you know, when we're driving and stuff, hey, you know, that's all on you. And in the end, you can actually be making less money than you're actually putting out. But do you want to be part of combat sports? Is this something you love doing? We don't do this because we become rich off of it. And everyone thinks we get rich off of it. We don't get rich off of it. It is the ability to have that opportunity and honor to be able to step into that cage or that ring with high-profile championship fighters that, you know, bust their ass to get to that point. Well, you're busting your ass to get to that point too. And when you make it, it's an accomplishment. But, you know, that's the kind of things that you sit there and later on in life you go, I was able to get to that.
It's all about experience. I agree. The last thing that I want to bring up on this point, John, so you're getting $1,900 with apologies to Holly Holm's win over Ronda Rousey. I think that Aldo versus McGregor is going to be, statistically, in terms of pay-per-view buys, the biggest fight in MMA this year, if not the biggest pay-per-view fight in the history of the UFC, the history of MMA in North America. But you're getting $1,900. Kenny Bayless for the biggest boxing of 2015, Floyd Mayweather Jr. versus Manny Pacquiao, also in Nevada, $25,000. I understand it's boxing. It's not MMA. It's a much bigger fight, the pay-per-view, the gate, the ticket prices. But $1,900 versus $25,000, John.
You know what? I'm going to tell you straight up. Kenny Bayless deserved every goddamn cent he got. Because, again, here's what people, you know, are looking at. If Kenny Bayless screwed up that fight, now Kenny did not screw it up. The fighter screwed it up. But, you know, there's a ton of, you know, pressure that's on Kenny. And the Nevada State Athletic Commission, when deciding who they're going to give that fight to, look at it. They have to trust the official they're giving it to because of how big that fight was. And look at that fight did pull in an incredible amount of money. And so his pay should, you know, get bumped up to a point where it's at least somewhat commensurate with what that, you know, fight is making. Those, you know, the fighters were making, you know, what, $400 million for Floyd, right. $300 million for Manny. You look at the amount of money that was brought in for it. Kenny Bayless deserved every cent that he got. I do not, you know, look down on the fact that, you know, he made 25 and I'll make 19. I'm very happy with my 19. I have no problems with it. And if Kenny gets to do another fight that's as big as Mayweather and Pacquiao, he deserves $25,000 again.
You are such a good person, John. I really magnanimous of you. No, I'm serious. You really are. You have no capacity to ever be bitter. You're like me. You recognize that we kind of hit the jackpot and we kind of live charmed lives, knock on wood, and there's no reason to ever complain.
There isn't. You know, if you sit there and you sit there and you go, well, he got it, I should get it. Bullshit. You know what? That's just not the way life is. And it's two different sports. And it's, you know, at this point, you know, hopefully McGregor and Aldo does incredible numbers. Hopefully it has the biggest gate. Hopefully it has the biggest pay-per-view. I hope that the UFC makes a ton of money. I hope that Aldo and McGregor make a ton of money. But I'm really not there for the money. I'm there because I love doing what I do.
Well said. Still to come on this week's episode of Let's Get It On, Big John and I will examine Tyson Fury's upset win over Vladimir Klitschko this past Saturday in Germany to claim multiple versions of boxing's World Heavyweight Championship, and we'll look at what this means for the entire heavyweight division. Plus, we'll answer your questions submitted via email and Twitter. With John McCarthy, I'm Sean Wheelock. You are listening.
Hey guys, if you're a fan of Let's Get It On and want to show us some love and support our podcast, before your next Amazon purchase, go to our website at letsgetitonpodcast.com and click the Amazon banner on the right-hand side of the page. It doesn't cost you anything, and there are no extra steps to go through. But doing this supports the podcast and allows us to continue to bring you great content every week. Remember, before you shop on Amazon, go to our website at letsgetitonpodcast.com and click the Amazon banner on the right side of the page. Thanks a lot.
Let's Get It On is presented by Audible.com. Audible is now offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, Go online to audibletrial.com/letsgetiton. Again, that is audibletrial.com/letsgetiton for your free audiobook.
When looking for new and exciting clothing concepts, look no further than Lambs to Lions. Lambs to Lions has great designs that incorporates the past from boxing with the new and exciting evolution of MMA. We all start out as lambs, but with time, training, and hard work, we can all become lions. Be part of the Lambs to Lions movement and check out all of their great designs. You can get your Lambs to Lions gear at the Las Vegas Fight Shop or go to lambstolionsbrand.com.
Now, back to Let's Get It On with your hosts, Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Every week on this podcast, John and I answer your questions. Ask away via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM, and now by using the SpeakPipe app on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. And of course, as I implore all of you every week, please include a pronunciation guide for your name. John, that is happily what our first questioner did, and that puts him right to the front of the queue. Abby Urdan Oriza asks.
Oh, my God.
I tell you, I had a Gideus Vlahovicius in Bellator, so bring it on. I just came back from one championship with Mongolian names. Bring it on. So he asked, is there any special preparation, John, you as a referee make for a fight? Do you study each fighter to understand their style, habits, and tendencies to better help you oversee their matches? And he follows up, and Sean, will there ever be any more Brazilian shirt names? A few of you in the audience get the reference. For a long time, I did the World Football Phone-In on BBC Radio 5. We did Brazilian shirt names. I have moved on from that show. If they want to do the Brazilian shirt names, it's their thing, but focused on this podcast. John, I'll explain all that to you off air. It's basically our most loyal listeners get a special nickname. Maybe we should do that on this podcast.
There you go.
I like that idea. So actually, yeah, we will bring Brazilian shirt names and we'll bring it to this podcast. Good idea.
There you are. For his question, you know, for the most part, most of the time as officials, we don't know who we are going to be working with. We get our assignments usually the night of the fight when we get to the arena and the commission gets there, they'll hand out the assignments and that's when we really learn who we are going to be officiating. When it comes to like the state of Nevada and what they do, when they have championship fights, they will always put the championship fights up to the commission for a vote on who the officials are going to be and so it becomes public record before that night of the fight. But I always like to be able to know something about the people that I'm working with. If I have the ability to check out film on fighters that I'm going to be working on, I always check to see what they're strong at, where I think they might have a weakness, where they like to fight, to get an idea about them. As a referee, it's always good to know as much as you can about the fighter because the more you know about them, the more you know about where they're good, where they're strong, what they can deal with, it always can help you in the fight. As a judge, it doesn't matter at all because it's only whatever they did in the past means nothing. It's only about what they do in the present. But as a referee, if given the opportunity, and there are times when we'll have commissions that will give us, our fights a couple of days beforehand, it's pretty rare, but when they do, it's always good to be able to look up those fighters and get an idea of who you're working with.
Next question comes from Greg Davis. He asks, one thing I've always found interesting in watching combat sports on television is that the on-screen timer is seemingly an estimate. Most TV broadcasts of mainstream sports will connect to the official timer and show it on their sports graphics. At worst, they'll put a camera on an official clock just to have something. But in MMA and boxing, it looks to only be a guess, which I believe is why the clock is taken off the screen for the final 10 seconds. So the viewer doesn't think the end of the round bell is hit too early or too late. Is there a specific reason the official time isn't used on the TV broadcast? Do you want this, John, or should I take it?
You know what? Go ahead and take it if you want. You know the answer.
Yeah, the answer is that official time is kept on stopwatches by the timekeeper. So there's not a scoreboard or an outside mechanism or machine. And Greg, you're exactly right. The time is an estimate. oftentimes you'll see when time has been called in a round by a referee that then the clock is way off. So it'll be taken off in TV terms, lost in the final 10 seconds because it's never quite in sync. But if you're next time you're at a fight, whether it's the UFC or whether it's a local AMI show in your hometown, you'll see the timekeeper is holding a stopwatch, or the really good ones like Marsha Champion, who's our top timekeeper in Kansas. She has two stopwatches, but there's not that scoreboard function.
Exactly. You know, when you're looking at the NFL or the NBA or the NHL, they've got the time, the official time is calculated. It's wired into that scoreboard or that giant freaking thing hanging in the middle of the ice. That is the official time, but there is no official time for the promotion or the production unit that is, you know, putting out that fight. They don't have the ability to be hooked into that timekeeper. So when they're sitting there and we start a fight, they're doing their little stopwatch. And if, especially with referees, if they call time or anything, there can be little variances in when the timekeeper stopped it compared to when the production company stops it. So that's why you are right. They always take it off at the end. So there is not that cry of, oh, there was a second left, or, oh, you should have stopped the fight. It is an estimate.
You know, that question does bring up an interesting point, though. What if, and it's not practical in all arenas, but or all venues, I should say, but in bigger arenas, especially ones that have basketball and hockey, you could put the official time on the scoreboard. But I guess the answer is it's never been done that way. So why change a good thing?
You know what? I don't know if you could the same way, because when you look at the official time, it's usually done up in the, up at the top of the arena where they have all the controllers at. That's where the timekeeper stays.
That's a great point.
The timekeeper stays, and it is a function of he watches the officials and does things off of the call of the official. Where in boxing or MMA, the timekeeper is sitting ringside. And there's reasons for them sitting ringside because there's things that they need to do, especially in boxing. You know, that timekeeper is also, you know, they're giving the time, but they're also, when there is a, you know, knockdown or something like that, they're coming up and they're standing up, and they're actually the one that starts the count that the referee will pick up after he, you know, gets people in places that he needs them to go to neutral corners and things like that. He'll pick up the count from the timekeeper. So having the timekeeper down on the floor at ringside is a basic element that needs to continue on. So I don't think you'll ever have that ability to do that exact same time like they do in the other sports.
This question from Nels Larson. John, how much experience did you have for MMA going into UFC 2? And UFC 2, John, was, of course, your debut as an MMA referee. Second event in MMA history, and there you are.
Well, how much experience do I have as a referee? Is that what he's asking?
I think just overall, he's saying MMA. I think what Nels is asking is just in combat sports and fighting in general.
Well, you know, as far as all right, let's go with the true story for UFC 2. I was given the job by Horian Gracie and Art Davey. It was mostly Horian was the one. But I had boxed and I had wrestled when I was young and did that for a long time. And then, you know, when I came into the Gracie Academy, I started in with, you know, just the normal training and stuff. And after a while, you know, started doing, you know, things with Hoyce off to the side and Horian, and eventually worked to the point where, you know, when they would have someone come in, we would actually do little fights and stuff. But, you know, as far as MMA experience, you know, the MMA I knew was what was called Valley Tudo. You know, there was an MMA. It was, you know, anything goes. And so when we would fight, it would be, you know, anything but no eye gouging, no biting, and no groin shots. That's what we would really talk about. And that's how the UFC came up with their first rule set. So I did that with them. And then Horian, you know, I did things with Horian in training and, you know, helping him with stuff. And he got to the point where, you know, I was actually training him in things while he was training me in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And he got to the point where he figured that I had no problem seeing people hurt. So he quickly thought that I had no feelings towards anyone, and that, you know, I was the guy for the job because I knew what guys should be doing in the fight, and didn't mind seeing them get hurt. So I'd be the right guy for the job. I wouldn't stop it. And quickly we found out I was wrong, that he was wrong about that. I did care, actually. It was hard to watch guys get beat when they didn't know how to stop what was going on. But, you know, the experience I had with, you know, MMA was everything that I had with, you know, well, real world experience that I'd had, but everything that I had with the Gracies and learning with them.
My first boxing refereeing when I was a kid, I had zero training, and I mean zero training. This is the pre-commission days. And I just tried to imitate Mills Lane. Who did you try to imitate? Who did you try to beat? Because there had only been one MMA event. There had been Pancrase, obviously, and some strong style, a lot of strong style wrestling, pro wrestling in Japan and Vale Tudo, and you'd seen the Gracie Challenge at the Academy. But who did you try to emulate?
I didn't try to emulate anybody. You know what's funny is, you know, I was working on LAPD at the time, and a good friend of mine, Joe, was working with me, and he knew that I was going to do it. And he goes, what are you going to do in there? He goes, you know, what are you going to do? And I go, I have no fucking clue. I got two guys who are going to beat the shit out of me. I'm going to sit there and I'm going to kind of look like I'm, you know, here. I'm going to, you know, like this. He goes, yeah, but you got to figure out what you're going to do. And I said, how do you figure out what you're going to do? And, I, you know, look at it. I was clueless. I absolutely admit it. And luckily, it, you know, my cluelessness didn't get anybody seriously hurt, but over time I ended up figuring out exactly, you know, what was important and how to do things. But I'll tell you what, you know, what was funny is at the time I was shunned. It was, you know, there's a big difference between nowadays and back then that people have no concept of, you know. And when you look at, you know, a lot of the guys that are, you know, doing fights now, they didn't have the ability. I didn't have the ability to learn from anybody. I had to go in there and figure things out on my own. If something worked, I tried to hold on to it. If it didn't work, if I made a mistake with it, figure out, okay, how did that mistake occur? How do I keep that from happening again? Let's move on from it. And so, you know, now there's courses. I teach courses. Herb teach courses. You know, Mario Yamasaki teaches courses and everything. And so there's courses that people go to try to get them past those all those mistakes and everything. But at the time, you know, I had no one. So all I could do is, you know, I watched old boxing and, you know, watched how, you know, certain things that people would do. And, you know, I learned from the Arthur McCannies, the Mills Lanes, the Marty Dankins, the people that are out there that were doing big time boxing. And, you know, Lou Flerpo, those are the guys that I was actually looking and seeing how they handled certain things, how they, you know, worked. And I tried to adjust it for MMA.
Great questions. Keep them coming from our listeners worldwide via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, Twitter, using the hashtag AskBJM. Well, on Saturday in Dusseldorf, Germany, Tyson Fury recorded a major upset when he defeated Vladimir Klitschko by unanimous decision to claim four versions of boxing's heavyweight world title. While this is a major story in the UK and a few European nations, it's largely been ignored, at best lightly covered, by general sports media in North America. John, what a contrast from previous eras when a new heavyweight world champion was treated rightly as a major, major sporting event.
Oh my God, it's crazy. You know, the heavyweight division in boxing has just disappeared. And part of the reason it disappeared is the Klitschkos. And, you know, they decided to make their home base Germany and really haven't done a whole lot of fights outside of that. You know, they've come to North America. And, you know, North America is the place, you know, in the United States, they kind of have felt that the heavyweight champion is theirs. And in the last how many years, you know, in the last 15, 20 years now, it hasn't been. And so it's different. You know, the heavyweight division is definitely not where North America, you know, gives its, you know, credit to. We look towards the lighter weight guys now and stuff. And it's funny that the heavyweight champion doesn't hold the esteem that it used to, at least in our eyes.
A big part of the problem, as I just mentioned, Tyson Fury claims four versions of the heavyweight world title. Right now, there are three recognized major heavyweight world champions in boxing: Tyson Fury, Ruslan Chagaev, and Deontay Wilder. I'm telling you, John, outside of hardcore boxing fans, I don't think you could find one in 100,000 people in North America who could identify these three fighters by their photos or even know the names. Stop by your supermarket or your gym or your workplace and say, who's Deontay Wilder? And he's an American. I think you're going to get some blank stares, even people who would say that they're fight fans.
Well, you know, look, if you understand boxing and you follow boxing, Deontay Wilder is an exciting fighter. Wilder is a beast. And you know what? People should know who he is because Deontay is phenomenal. Here's a guy who's, you know, his knockout record is just incredible. He's undefeated as a heavyweight. You know, he ended up beating, you know, Stiverne to take the title. You know, he's got one section of it. Now Tyson Fury has the other. He's got the WBCs. But when you watch, you know, someone like Deontay's fights are good fights. He fights. And that's the whole thing that is important for the sport of boxing is for a long time, you know, and this is not taking anything away from the Klitschkos. They have been phenomenal, you know, boxers, but their fights are boring. And most of, you know, Vladimir's, you know, heavyweight championship fights are going to decisions and he's outpointing guys. And every now and then he knocks somebody out, but they're just not exciting fights. And there's no, you know, explosion to their fights. There's no excitement. It's just boring. And they've killed the heavyweight division. Now, part of the, you know, reason they killed the heavyweight division is, you know, what's occurring now is we have so many, you know, good athletes here in North America that are doing things other than fighting. You know, they're able to make big money in basketball. They're able to make big money in football. And so the good athletes are going towards those sports instead of going towards boxing. So, you know, it's a different time. It's a different era. But there's guys out in the heavyweight division. Tyson Fury is now the heavyweight champion. Okay, absolutely. He's the champion. He's not a great fighter. You know, he did a good job in beating Klitschko. He beat Klitschko at his own game. He stood in front of him. He's a big, big guy. He's long, and he gave Klitschko problems because Klitschko, obviously, you know, just it wasn't his night. But there's other guys out there. You put Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder, I want to see that fight. I'll watch that fight because I think Deontay Wilder puts his head into the second row. All right?
I agree with you, and Deontay Wilder is already angling for that fight. he has a similar opinion.
Trust me, he wants that fight. But, you know, there's a guy out there, you know, most people don't follow boxing, you know, on our show, but there's a heavyweight out there that I'm excited about. And, you know, you talk about, this is the first, you know.
I know who you're going to say.
Well, all right, let's see.
It's your Chinese fighter.
No.
Nope.
God, no. Taishang, no, that's not him. But, you know, Lennox Lewis was the first, you know, if you want to say British heavyweight champion in, you know, how many years was it? And, you know, he was a, you know, great fighter. And now Tyson Fury is the champion. And, you know, and the Brits are going to love it because, Brit, you know, the Brits love boxing. But they've got a guy, his name's Anthony Joshua, who's 6'6". He's built like Adonis. He can hit like a truck. This guy's going to be good. I think he's about 14-0 right now. And I think he's got a fight coming up. I think it's on December 12th. For the British Commonwealth champion heavyweight championship. But, you know, you take him and put him against Tyson Fury. You know, Tyson's going to have a hell of a fight in that one. I think that Anthony Joshua is going to bring some excitement to the heavyweight division. He goes after people. He fights. He wings shots. He's exciting to watch. You put him and Deontay Wilder in a fight, I would pay money on pay-per-view to watch it.
I remember in the 1990s when people were saying, oh, boxing is dying. It's not what it used to be. But now when you look back to 20 years ago, to the 1990s, it looks like a pretty golden era for boxing. You have Tyson, Holyfield, George Foreman's second career, Lennox Lewis, Riddick Bowe, Michael Moore. It was a really good time for boxing. And I've talked about this on the program before. When I was a kid in high school, we would get together for fight parties. And sometimes it was a group of guys. Sometimes it was guys and girls. But we would watch the big boxings on pay-per-view, on Showtime, on HBO. The 15-year-old version of me now is doing the same thing. But they're doing it with Aldo versus McGregor and Rousey versus Holm. I don't think a lot of 15-year-old kids who love fighting and everything about fights like I did as a kid are really that into boxing. And I think you have to look no further than the fact that, and we are, I'll give the caveat, we are doing this from a North American perspective. We're both Americans. We do this show out of the US and different countries perceive this differently. If we were in the UK, we'd be talking about this in different terms. But from our North American, US-Canadian perspective, you have to look at the reality this fight was not well covered at all. It was almost an afterthought, if covered at all, by the media post-fight. Maybe one or two lines. That's really all you saw. It was on HBO, not on pay-per-view. It's in Germany, not in the U.S. And it comes on in the middle of a Saturday afternoon live on HBO. There was just no heat going into this fight, again, from our North American perspective.
Yeah, because it's not it's really not being sold to the North Americans, you know, in any fashion. This is you know, the Klitschkos of, you know, basically, you know, they're Ukrainian guys who set up shop in Germany. They become, you know, German citizens, and Germany is where they want to fight. You know, he's had a couple of fights, you know, in Madison Square Garden, but they just don't sell. You know, he's selling, you know, 50,000 seats in Germany, and he's having a hard time filling up the Madison Square Garden. So, you know, they're looking at the money aspect, and they kind of killed, you know, that heavyweight atmosphere here in North America. But there's guys that can bring it back, and Deontay Wilder can definitely help bring it back. And, you know, getting some of these other young guys, you know, like I said, you know, wait till you see Anthony Joshua. I think he's, you know, 14-0, 14 knockouts. This dude's a stud, you know, and that's what the heavyweight division needs. You know, if you go back to the days when the heavyweights were, you know, something. You know, the last time, you know, people look at it and stuff, you know, Tyson, you know, he brought an excitement. People were, they wanted to see what was going to happen next. You know, then you had the other guys in there, Riddick Bowe and Evander Holyfield and then Lennox Lewis and stuff. And all of those guys, you know, they had fights that made people want to see what was going to happen next. And that's what we have to get back to.
I was interested to see how this was playing in the UK. My wife's from England. I have a lot of friends in the United Kingdom. So I went onto the BBC's website to read their story. Got a lot of coverage, as you would imagine. Tyson Fury's a Brit. And in the opening paragraph, the writer describes the fight as dour. What a great British English word, but also how apt. Dour. I think you want words like scintillating and electrifying. You don't want dour, but I watched it live on HBO. It was pretty dour, actually. It's a good word.
Well, I watched the fight, and I don't even know the word dour. So it was
dull, boring, dreary.
I felt bad for Tony Weeks. My friend Tony Weeks is the referee, and Tony was having to push those two guys from hugging each other. Oh. It was a hug fest, and it was, you know, it just is not what the sport of boxing is supposed to be.
Every week here on Let's Get It On, we bring you our poll question. You can cast your vote on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Last week we asked, are you in favor of one night, 8-fighter MMA tournaments? 59% of you voted no. This week's poll question, do you feel that this is the worst era in heavyweight boxing history? Let your voice be heard. Vote yes or no on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. There have been lean times and there have been transitional periods. This, for me, and I like to think of myself as an amateur boxing historian. I read a lot about boxing going back to the 1850s, 1860s, and the bare knuckle days and London prize ring rules and Broughton rules. Across the board, I can't think of a worse time. And I think MMA is largely the culprit because so many great athletes who are attracted to combat sports, who would have gone into boxing a generation ago, are now going into mixed martial arts. There are some very good fighters out there, but if you look historically at other eras for me, John, this is a pretty, I'll use the word, dour time in heavyweight boxing history.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's the heavyweights have really, you know, they've gone down, but I think it is because, you know, the other sports and, you know, MMA, I guess, could be one of them. But the big ones is, you know, out of, you know, North America, football and basketball take our big, great athletes away. And, you know, it's, you know, there's a couple guys out there, Dominic Brazil, who was a football player, who is, you know, switched over to boxing, you know, was on the U.S. Olympic boxing team. You know, Dominic is doing good out there, and they're trying to get some of these, you know, athletes that came from different sports that are big people because, you know, in the heavyweights now, you know, heavyweights are big people now. I mean, in boxing, you know, you got to be 6'6", 6'8", you know. All of them are big, big people. You can't be the, you know, the Mike Tyson at 5'11" and 215 pounds. You just don't see him. You know, those fighters are just not able to compete with the size of some of these guys to get inside on them and to be able to land punches. So, you know, you got to have these big people, and it's tough to find good athletes that want to get punched in the head.
I read something really interesting, and it was a poll that was conducted in 1950, and it was a survey of people who identified themselves as American sports fans, surveying the U.S. What is your favorite sport? This is 1950. Number one was baseball. Number two was boxing. Number three was horse racing. How the world has changed since 1950. And for me, boxing isn't dying. It's not dead. It's kind of like horse racing. Horse racing is still there. It still has its subculture. It still has its hardcores. It still has the occasional big event that's going to excite the masses, but it's just not societally, culturally relevant to the point that it was previously. People just don't get that whipped up over horse racing anymore, certainly not in 19 like they did in 1950. And I think the same thing can be said about boxing. Largely for me, and I just use myself as an example, someone who loved all things fighting as a kid. And I still do. But those kids aren't attracted to boxing now when they're 10, 15, 20 years old. They're largely attracted to MMA.
Yeah, but you know, it's just, you know, we've talked about it before. It's the natural progression of the way people look at things, and especially kids. You know, what we were doing when we were kids on skateboards, look at what they're doing now. You know, when we were, you know, racing motocross, you know, we were, you know, crossing it up, kicking the back end of the bike out, bringing it down. We thought we were cool. They're doing freaking double backflips on motorcycles. You know, everything has stepped up, you know, to a point where most kids look at boxing as, oh, that's my grandpa's sport. They look right at it, they call it pillow fighting. You know, I've actually had kids say, I don't want to put pillows on my hands. It's like, really? Here, let me hit you with this pillow.
You know, hit you with the 12-ounce pillow.
They look at it and they just look at it. Why would I want to do something where all I can do is punch when I can do kicks and I can pick people up and slam them down? And all the things that are associated with MMA just make it grander in their eyes and more, you know, more appealing to them as their type of sport than what boxing does. And that's, in my opinion, that's going to continue to grow in that direction.
I love boxing. I'll always love boxing. I definitely love MMA more. What really changed for me, John, is when I was 20 years old, I would watch A versus B in boxing. I'll do that in MMA. I won't watch A versus B in boxing any longer. I have to be interested in at least one of the fighters to watch. Year after year, I watched Tuesday night fights on USA as a kid and then Friday night fights on ESPN too. I would just watch because it was on. I'm not that level of boxing fan anymore, but I am an MMA. This weekend, I'm going to two local shows in Kansas. I'm going to a show in Wichita that's promoted by my buddy David Rickles, the Bellator fighter, and then I'm going to one in Topeka, Kansas. There'll be a lot of amateur fights. I'm going to be thrilled to be there because I'm that type of MMA fan. I'm just not that type of boxing fan anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's really what you're seeing, but there's still a ton of boxing fans out there.
Oh, absolutely there are. And it's not the alarmist. Boxing is dying. Boxing is dead.
Boxing's never going to die.
I don't buy that argument. I just don't think it has the relevancy that it did in the 90s and certainly in the eras previous to the 90s.
Well, I think in any sport, no matter what sport it is, we have to have stars. We have to have people that the general public, they start to associate with. You know, it happened, you know, with MMA. It was Ronda Rousey, you know. All these women were starting to watch MMA because of Ronda Rousey. They didn't know shit about MMA, but they saw this woman. They liked the way she talked. They liked her boldness. They liked the fact that, you know what, she would sit there and be honest about stuff. They liked the fact that she talked about body image, you know, and things like that. And she brought eyes onto MMA that somebody else was not going to do. And so that's the kind of athlete boxing needs to have to start to bring more eyes to it. Now there's fights out there that, you know what, I can't wait to see if they come about. I want to see, you know, Canelo against a Triple G. I want to see Andre Ward against a Kovalev. Those are the kind of fights that keep boxing going. If we have those kind of fights, boxing is going to be fine. It's when you get into the era of we have promoters that won't work together and we have fights where we have a bunch of fighters that end up not fighting each other. That's what ends up killing, you know, that rush to want to see things in boxing, and it can't happen. can't happen in MMA either. You know, we've got to have fights that people want to see.
So final point on this. I'm buddies with John Brown. He was the trainer of Tommy Morrison. John, I don't know how old he is. He's probably mid to late 60s, I'm guessing. He is a real boxing guy through and through. I love John Brown. He's a fantastic guy. John's always saying to me, Sean, what are you doing with this MMA business? And you need to tell these MMA guys of yours, come to boxing. He said, especially the big guys. John says this to me literally every time I see him. He said, you don't have to be better than everybody in the world to be the heavyweight champion in boxing any longer. You just have to be better than 20 guys. And there's really something to that.
Well, there is something to it. And, you know, when you look at it, what he's saying is true, but that's not a good comment.
No, and John knows that. This is with eyes wide open. This is a lifelong boxing guy with eyes wide open, realizing the place of his sport now.
Yeah, and you know, it's just, I hope there comes that point where we have the stars that, you know, are there to, you know, push the sports forward, because it needs to be done. Boxing is a great sport. I love boxing. You know, I love MMA more, I admit it, but it's, you know, we always have to be, you know, looking for those new stars to push the sports forward, because that's what gets people's attention. When you have a fighter that gets someone's attention, now eyes and ears start following them. And that's what helps grow the sports.
Big John and I are back with you next week for an all-new episode of Let's Get It On, first available on Friday. Download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/letsgetitonpodcast, and on Twitter, @PodcastMMA for this show, and for us personally, @JohnMcCarthyMMA and @SeanWheelock. To ask us a question, make a comment, or inquire about becoming a sponsor of Let's Get It On, email us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Again, that's info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. This is most definitely your podcast as much as it is ours. Every week, we are gaining more and more listeners in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and worldwide, so please help us spread the word. For John McCarthy, our outstanding producer Chris Lakin, and our entire crew, I'm Sean Wheelock. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been a presentation of Lineup Media Group, online at lineupmediagroup.com.
Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever you listen to the show. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in sponsoring Let's Get It On, contact us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Get all the Lineup Media Group podcasts, like Chasing Bucks and Pangers on nhlpodcast.com, Ocho Man, Behind the 8-Ball, and You're on the Clock NFL on our website at lineupmediagroup.com.